I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Dear wrestling fans, it is I, C, and I'm Jew, the best Jew in the world, and this is a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, CM Jew himself, a.k.a. Thomas Primetime, that is Captain of the Absolution Network, and this is episode 28 of the reviews. And on this episode, well, I initially had just one thing to do since, you know, it was December, and, you know, as I said before, we're going to take a look at Starrcade first till we get to Armageddon. So tonight we were, and are still going to, by the end of it, take a look at the first of 2 straight years of an epic storyline. The next episode will be next year's Starrcade, but we start off with a look at Starrcade 1983, start, or at least the big first match of the epic rivalry that was Flair versus Rhodes. You know, that would continue all the way to next year's Starrcade, which we'll review next episode. That was the plan. So yes, Starrcade 1983 is what we are reviewing tonight. That's the main review. But then last week happened. You know, I find it funny, you know, it starts off last week, I guess people consider Saturday to start all the epic almost last week, when CM Punk, a.k.a. Phil Brooks, announced, and, you know, Dana White thought they would have the news of the week by saying, CM Punk, a.k.a. Phil Brooks, is now fighting in the UFC, to which I groaned and cursed and mumbled and growled and, you know, just in a pissy mood. Of course, it was all finals week. Crowd and everything till, you know, till Thursday. And in my search for a saving grace in the guiding light, NXT Evolution happened, and yeah. Dana White, you thought that, you know, announcing that Phil Brooks was going to be the biggest news of the week, didn't you? You thought the NXTR Evolution wouldn't cut it, huh? Well, all I have to say to that is this.
Oh,
Yes. NXT Revolution gloriously happened this past week. So, first, we'll get to some news. The obvious Phil Brooks move. Because I do want to make some comments on that. Because obviously I do. Since I'm such a hater of CM Punk, right? T-Dub. But we'll talk about that. Then we'll have a review of NXT Revolution, followed by a review of Starrcade 1983. So it is a packed house tonight, right here on CMG's Wrestling Reviews episode 28. And that was 4 minutes of awesomeness to get to what we're talking about. So I guess starting off with the news, as I mentioned before, Phil Brooks is going to be fighting in the UFC. I kind of want to touch on this because I think that I get a bad rap from certain people that who shall remain nameless.
TWK!
I hate CM Punk and Phil Brooks. And, because I disagree with what he said on his podcast. And, it's not so much I disagree, it's that I just flat out don't believe it. Listening to that and then him announcing this, as I said, I feel like I'm getting played. I feel like he's working an angle. CM Punk is a master manipulator. I really believe so. Yeah, people can harp on the fact of what happened on his wedding day all they want, and certainly that is a horrible thing, but you're looking at one single thing. You are. You're not looking at the fact that he had this supposed injury, and yes, you can talk about the whole old school mentality you want, but CM Punk is new school, and he is smarter than that, and why he didn't go to a doctor, I have no idea. It's little things like that. CM Punk can talk about how he's old school all he wants, but he's always been new school, and he's always been a bit of a manipulator, and he's always been smarter than the rest of the people out there. So I have a hard time believing that he, again, proof positive. I go back to those little things that he talked about, that he said started off, like, saying that the movie deal and that he'd missed the European tour. He knew it was the European tour, but, like, for whatever reason, he needed them to tell him it's the European tour. It's like, let corporate do what it wants on these little things and get over yourself. It's more, by the way, just CM Punk. It's a perfect example of the state of the world. Of all the horrible things that corporations do, it's the little stupid things that we get hung up on that we shouldn't be focused on. If we focus on the big things, the little things will go away. But no, we have to vehemently go after those little things, and then that's the end of my political statement. Because I don't want to harp on that. So I think I get a bad rap personally because I disagree with the things he said. Because I think he's playing an angle, personally. And I think proof positive of that is him signing with the UFC, including reports from, quote, Dana White himself, that basically he had been in talks with CM Punk to sign with the UFC after his contract ended before, since last December, which was technically before he got the injury, or, it may have been when he had the injury. Because I don't want completely under, because I think CM Punk made his timeline confusing. But it was before the Royal Rumble match in which he left. All of this just makes it seem that everything he said were excuses for him to lead so he could have sympathy when he was going to leave all along. And understandable, you have issues with your company. But again, why can't he just sit there and say, look, I saw the company going in a different direction than I liked. I wanted to try mixed martial arts. So I got injured. I decided to, sit out the rest of my contract to heal my injuries, and I decided not to resign. Decided to, you know, have a mutual split. And I understand sitting here saying that it coming on wedding day, I'm not even gonna get into that can of beans, because that's something I have been arguing with Matty J ever since the podcast was released on that can of worms. But again, it just seems like CM Punk could have done the perfect, and I understand, well, that's not CM Punk. But at the same point in time, that's what I want. I want the professionalism. You want to be considered this top star, this well-respected star, you have to have some sense of professionalism. You know? And maybe we'll get that. Maybe a couple years we'll get that. He'll come back and just say, you know what? Still the way I did it, I was wrong. And I, you know, like Austin. You know, you constantly hear Steve Austin talk about, you know, look, what I did was stupid and wrong. I was hot-headed, I was burned out, and I couldn't see beyond my own feet, which is what happens when you're burned out. But he recognized that what he did was completely unprofessional and unfair to the fans. He recognized and admitted his mistake, and fans are always willing to forgive. We'll never forget, but we're willing to forgive. You know, it leads to that other thing, to where I almost get the feeling that I wouldn't be surprised if in 3 to 4 years, you know, CM Punk comes back to WWE. It's like, oh, he says never ever. Yeah, that's what he says now. But I have the sneaking suspicion that, like, in 3 to 4 years, after his UFC career is done, he's, like, gotten the mixed martial arts out of his system, he's going to come back, and he's going to basically demand the Brock Lesnar contract to do what he wants, when he wants, show up when he wants. As this attraction. And, you know, especially after what I saw with NXT Evolution, in particular, especially if Triple H is in charge of WWE by then, I hope they have the sense to say, no, you said you were done with wrestling. You said you didn't want to wrestle anymore. Well, you know, we want to make sure that you keep that commitment to you and your fans. Because I don't want CM Punk coming back to WWE anymore. I don't want him taking the spot of hardworking wrestlers who obviously had moved up from NXT Evolution, who are fucking stealing the show night in and night out, which is a perfect segue into NXT Our Evolution, which took place on December 11th, 2014, from the Full Sail Arena in Orlando, Florida. Or Winter Park, Florida, technically, but that's the Orlando area, basically. Featuring six matches. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into our review, and we're going to do this proper. Let's get into our review of NXT, Our Evolution. J put it, curtain jerker that they could have ever done. You know, we knew Kevin Owens could be there. We thought he might have some interactions like Daniel and Tommy did in the last one and everything. No. Straight up debut of Kevin fucking Owens, aka Kevin fucking Steen, comes out, the crowd goes fucking nuts. I mean, he just gets in the ring and you just feel the charisma like just coming like a tsunami off him. It's like, oh my god, he's here. And then comes CJ Parker, aka the jobber, the big jobber of NXT. Not big as in size, but like, he's their main, like, anytime anybody needs to be pushed over, it's CJ Parker that comes out. Which I guess will give him a steady paycheck, but as one person put it, it's not a good indication of if he'll move up to the main roster. But then again, you know, it's a steady paycheck. But, yeah, that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about Kevin fucking Owens owning CJ Parker. I mean, bell rings, Parker's cocky, has his back to him, gets splashed in the corner, gets, you know, forearm in the closer, a corner, rolling seton in a corner, goes out, and, Topo, goes out to the ringside, Parker does, and what does Owens do? But a Tope, halo over the rope for a 266-pound man. It's like, oh, and the crowd loves it. And, you know, it's this match only went for 3 minutes, so we're not even a 2 minutes into this match. 2 minutes into 2 minutes into his WWE debut, and Owens is already bleeding when Parker hits the palm strike and, like, breaks his fucking nose. It's like, not even 2 minutes in, and he's already bleeding. There's like, there's blood! There's blood on a WWE pay-per-view! And the crowd sees it and goes fucking nuts. It's like, this is awesome! This is awesome! It's like, oh my god. And understand this. I think people get the... I don't understand why people went crazy for blood. It's because the fact of we have blood anymore. And it's the point of... And I think I said this... I said this to other people, in particular regarding the NXT Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. It's not that we want this mountains amount of blood. If you remember from my Survivor Series 2000, and you know, I knocked. In fact, I think this is another place I talked about it. Was talking about too much blood in that case. But there are certain matches and there are certain instances where blood happening vindicates a match. It makes the match feel real. It's a certain sense of danger. Like, oh my god, it's a visible sign. It's the sign of a visible injury that the audience can immediately see, and it's a presence, excuse me, of danger. And we're not asking for mountains and buckets of blood. I mean, we're not asking for C4 levels or Cage of Death, CCW levels of blood, but, you know, damn it, for a wrestler to bleed every once in a while, you know, a slight cut, yeah, that would be great because it adds validity to the match, I think. And it did to this one, and, like, hit the palm strike, kick out, Parker takes his head, nope. Owens owns Parker, finishes him off with a pop-up powerbomb, which was awesome. I mean, I knew we wouldn't see the package pile driver because he lost that pile driver match to Lawler. But still, it was very interesting to see what his, you know, finisher would be. And I think the pop-up powerbomb can be an awesome finisher because it's something he can hit out of nowhere. Our next match is the Lucha Dragons of Kalisto and Sin Cara, the NXT Tag Team Champions versus the Vaudevillains of Aiden English and Simon Gotch for the NXT Tag Team Championship. I really enjoyed this match. Now, while Matty J may have been spoiled by Chikara, I wasn't. And this was an absolutely great tag team match, told a great story, great back and forth. You know, again, both played their character to the T. I thought English and Gotch were great. You know, the whole chivalry chance going. You know, I loved that Aiden English tried to save Gotch by shoving him out of the way to take the double suicide dive attempt from Kalisto and Kara. And Kara and Kalisto were great as well. You know, they talk about the Ascension going up and adding validity to the tag team ranks in the main roster. But I think we could see Kalisto and Sin Cara up soon add that same thing. Because they are both awesome. And the match ends with, you know, Kalisto's in the seated position after the suicide dive as he rolls back in the ring. And Gotch, who's a bit fresher, comes in and tries to get him. He's in the seated position. Literally, Gotch tries to raise him up and pops him up. And from that seated position, basically flips all the way around and hits the Cella Del Rey on Gotch and gets the 1-2-3. It was an amazing maneuver. And I think, unfortunately, it becomes very, very much overshadowed by everything else that happens in this event. But it was a very solid, wonderful tag team match. It's also, if you take out the Omen's debut and the next match, because they were short matches, of the four sort of big main matches, this was the worst match of the night. And when this is the worst match of the night, that tells you something. When this is the worst match of the night, you know you're in for 5 stars. Our next match, and again, this is part of it being booked brilliantly, is that you had debut match, then you had that Lucha Dragon match, which is solid, then another sort of short match, and then you had the three main events. And it was all building up. It was all build up. The Owens, Great Curtain Trigger, it kind of combined this match of Baron Corbin versus Ty Dillinger with the Lucha Dragons. They all build off each other. It was just building and building and building. Everything that's built to the main event. But a singles match that only lasts, they have it listed at 41 seconds. Technically, the match only goes 38 seconds. And I know that because that's what the crowd got to. But I guess they're counting entrances in a way. I couldn't imagine can entrance. So I think somebody got that wrong. It was 38 seconds. Or should be 36 seconds. But Baron Corbin versus Ty Dillinger. And Baron Corbin defeats Ty Dillinger, like I said, in 36 seconds with trying to remember what his finisher is. Can't remember. End of day. I knew it and couldn't remember it. Like, and wow, he was a three. Things will happen when you get caught on people's Wikipedia's page. I love this squash match for a certain reason. Is that this wasn't necessarily just a squash match. This wasn't, oh, let's show him hitting the end of days in 36 seconds. This was about who was at ringside, which was Bull Dempsey. Bull Dempsey was at ringside, and after the match, they like stare at each other. They're basically building up this big match that's going to happen between Baron Corbin and Bull Dempsey. And this is beautiful for many reasons. One, because this is about build up to a storyline that will probably have to take place at the next pay-per-view, and we can't wait. Which leads to the second point, that we can't wait for a match between Baron Corbin and Bull Dempsey. Two people, who are homegrown WWE talent, which shows you the roster depth of NXT and just how bright the future of WWE is. It's not just these international superstars of the and superstars of the independent circuit that WWE are bringing in. They are homegrown talent that WWE is developing that's going to do great alongside these superstars. You know, these are going to be the great supporting cast. These are going to be the next Dolph Ziggler's. These are going to be the next. I'm trying to think. Kofi Kingston. Yeah, Kofi Kingston might seem like a negative nomination to other people, but the next Goldust, the next Kofi Kingston, you know, there are these great supporting characters, you know, that you need to really elevate the superstars. You know, you have the superstars, you have the A+, and then you have the A players. You know, the supporting cast. You know, every great main actor needs a great supporting actor to elevate them. And that's who these guys are probably going to end up being. And that's a great role to have. I think people have that if you're not in the main event and not this mega superstar, there's negative denomination there. But think of how many great superstars we can think of that were really just supporting players. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and, you know, Jake the Snake Roberts, Dio Brown, Rikishi, at one time before he became a megastar, Edge, Christian were this, the Hardys were this. You know, there are a lot of great wrestlers, and sometimes they do move up to the main event. But there are a lot of great wrestlers who have been supporting players who can put on great matches and do great things. Regardless of what they become, because they can certainly become main event players. This is homegrown talent. It shows you the depth of the roster, and the fact that we can't wait for homegrown talent to wrestle is great news for the WWE and its future. Then we have our next match. Then we have Finn Balor and Hideo Itami versus The Ascension. So let me set the mood. The Ascension come out first. In their awesome entrance with their awesome music. Where they rise from the ground, everything. And it's awesome. Crowd's hyped. Then it comes Hideo Itami. And this like sort of orange and black, almost karate gi type of outfit. He had the short pants that he usually had, but it's this orange and black thing that really looks wonderful. It almost looks like the gi from Dragon Ball Z in a way, which I can't help wonder if that was the whole point of it. Then the lights go out, and out comes Finn Balor in fucking face paint and body paint, as what can only be described as, you know, red, there's red and black, and there's these white, sharp, fanged teeth that are basically on his neck. So, like, if he tilts his head back and exposes his neck, it looks like this gaping mouth of sharp, jagged fangs. People said it's carnage. Some people said it's venom. I think it's more than likely something that is influenced by the combination of the two. If it is a comic book character, it's more probably Wrath, which is a character that was supposedly an offspring of Venom. Sorry, what was his name? Wrath? I'm trying to remember what it is. There's this character in the Marvel Universe, and I don't think many people know of him. That is a combination. Basically, he's the offspring. He's a cop. Well, the Symbionite itself is the offspring of the Venom Symbionite and the Carnage Symbionite. Basically the Symbionites with the personalities of the people who usually wore them. And it's a Symbionite that basically latched onto this policeman. And he ended up trying to be basically the same thing that, you know, Venom was in the 90s, that dark vigilante. I don't think Marvel really has used them a lot since he was... I'm trying to remember when exactly. I want to say the early 1000s he was created. But they really haven't used him. I believe his name is Wrath. I think he could have been that, but I think it was more of an original creation inspired by that. Because I really don't remember Venom or Carnage really having fangs like that. Regardless, it was goddamn amazing. The entrance went on for 3 minutes. And it was glorious. I mean, Finn Balor was perfectly timed with the music. And then the match started. Well, technically it didn't. Then they attacked each other and they fought each other, and as matches this epic usually do. And then the bell rang and then the match started. Great back and forth confrontation. Finn Balor, Hidomi Itami, and the Ascension all looked great. Great back and forth. I fucking jumped out of my seat when Finn Balor did Bloody Sunday, an inverted Bloody Sunday. It's like, oh yes. And but the strangely enough, besides the entrance, what may have been, at least at this point, and what may have been the biggest pop of this match, which was a moment to where, near the end of the match, where Hidomi gets Connor, or excuse me, gets Victor on his shoulders, and looked like he's about to prepare for the go to sleep, because of course Hidomi is the original inventor of the GTS, not CM Punk. And yeah. This huge pop for the almost go to sleep. Double foot stomp by Balor and Tommy win it. Just a great match. And so next is Charlotte versus Sasha Banks for the NXT Women's Champion. And I'm sitting here thinking, oh my god, how the hell are they going to follow that? There's no way they'll follow that. There's no way. And god damn it, these two women did it. I mean, just an absolute amazing match. And it was not just how they can follow that, but how are they going to follow the wonderful women's match from the last pay-per-view of Charlotte versus Natalya? And god damn it, if they didn't surpass it, they at least matched it. And my god, they oh, wow. This was a wonderful match. Great back and forth. Charlotte and Sasha Banks, I think, showed that they're both ready for the main roster. And one of the moments of the night happens where Charlotte goes for a moonsault. Sasha Banks rolls out of the way forward towards the corner thinking, oh, I've gotten out of the way. But Charlotte lands on her feet and then does a front seton and lands on Banks. One of the most mind-blowing matches of moves I've ever seen. I mean, I was like, I didn't know Kalisto was in this match. But it's like, my god, I haven't even seen a man do that. That was amazing. The match ends with a natural selection, basically where from the top rope, or at least where Charlotte is sitting on the top rope and has Charlotte in the corner, I mean Sasha in the corner, hits it from that position. So it's that, I don't want to call it a reverse, I wonder what you call that. Let me look it up. Natural forward somersault cutter. Yeah, so I was going to call it a blockbuster, but it's really, I think it is a good move. And this is a great match. Great back and forth by Sasha and Charlotte, and just a solemn, and they definitely followed up the amazingness, and they kept the mood going, and they kept the crowd pumped, and they kept the energy for our final match of the evening. Adrian Neville, the NXT champion, versus Sami Zayn for the NXT championship. And Zayn has said that if he loses, he will personally quit NXT. Though they said on the special the WWE as well. Oh my god. I didn't say this before, but one of the things that made this pay-per-view great was the crowd, to which I said to Maddie J on the WrestleCast, where I talked about this before. I'm like, can somebody please tell me how Triple H was able to transport the 1997/1998 ECW Arena crowd and transport them to 2014 Winter Park, Florida, Orlando, and Full Sail University? Because he did it somehow. I mean, they were just oh my God, amazing. I mean, the chants of ole, ole, ole were drowning out the music. The announcers were having to scream at each other. It was like, this is wrestling. Which, by the way, that happened, that chant happened the last one. It happened during the Baylor Itami Ascension match. And it happened during the women's match. Oh, and that chant definitely happened. There were holy shit chants. There were this is awesome chants. And more importantly, there was a this is wrestling. This is wrestling. This is wrestling. Oh my God. These two were absolutely amazing. Move for move. I mean, the sign of greatness is amazing counters, I think. That's one of the signs of a great match. And just this great counter to where Neville does the flip and then jumps up and lands. And usually from that position, he'll twirl around and hit a Hurricane Runner or something like that. But what happens instead, Zane pops him up in the air a little bit and catches him and immediately turns it into the Blue Thunder Bomb. Just freaking amazing. The sort of the way they told the little story that led to basically Zane hitting the Topa Hilo on the steel ramp. Mind you, of course, this after him doing the springboard moonsault that he does. The storylines of Neville trying everything to retain his title against Zane. Zane going through where the title's in front of him, like, do I use the title against Neville and everything? And just, oh, that you had the tornado DDT, which will always look awesome. But then Zane, you know, Neville tries to get a quick one, roll up Schoolboy while he's, interrupted. I don't want to use interrupted. But while he's preoccupied about whether he should use the title to hit Neville, Zane is preoccupied. Neville tries to sneak up, get the roll pin, doesn't work. Zane catches him and does the exploder suplex in the corner. And you're like, oh my God, this is it. It will actually happen. It'll actually happen. And boom, Zane hits the Helluva Kick at 1, 2, 3. And that crowd goddamn blew the motherfucking roof off Full Sail University. It was fucking amazing. And then the amazingness didn't stop there because it's all the cheers and everything. And then all the wrestlers come out to congratulate Zane. Who's the first one to come out? It's fucking Owens. Slides in the ring. He's in the corner. And initially, Zane's like, what's going to happen here? And, oh my God, Owens hugged. And anybody who's an independent wrestling fan, and I can confirm this because Maddie told me this too, we all started crying because it was fucking beautiful. I mean, to see Zane and Owens, a.k.a. Jericho and Steen, and now in a WWE ring with Zane being the champion, it was a thing of beauty. He's being graduated by Amore, Enzo Amore, and Colin Cassidy, and Tommy, and Baylor. Trying to remember his name. Solomon Crowe was there, too, and just, like, amazing. Pat Patterson was there, who's been a big push for these Montreal guys. And he was, you could see how ecstatic he was. And then he goes up and he helps Neville up and thanks him for a great match. And there's a moment where Neville's up and they're looking face to face. Zane extends his hand. Neville kicks it out of the way. It's like, brothers don't shake. Brothers got a hug and hug Zane. It was like, oh my God. This was a thing of beauty. And, now, if there is any criticism of these moments, is that this lingers on a bit too long, so it made what happened next a bit too obvious. But, you know, they get out of the ring, and who's there to help him up the ramp, or to, like, go with him up the ramp? It's Owens, and you think you have this feel-good moment as they're going up the ramp. Nope. Owens then, like, slams Zane's head backwards into the metal ramp. and then power bombs him on the hardest part of the ring, on the ring corner of the ring apron. It's like, to which, to quote Matty J, you know, they gave us Steen Generico on day fucking one. I'm throwing my money at the screen and it's doing nothing. As you can tell, there is so much awesomeness with this pay-per-view. It's absolutely amazing. Every match built towards the other. Every match was wonderful. Like I said, the tag team championship match was the worst match of the night, and only because the other matches were so goddamn fucking awesome that when that is your worst match of the night, like I said, this is amazing. Top three moments. So hard to choose because there's so many great moments, but I will actually, you know, number three, Charlotte's moonsault in landed, then landing, and then into the seat, the front seaton. Goddamn fucking amazing. Honorable mention, by the way, on this list, to Kalisto's Cella de Rol from the seated, Cella de Sol, excuse me, from the seated position. Number two, Sami Zayn actually getting the title win. Just that moment was goddamn amazing. But the number one moment of the night has to go to Finn Balor's goddamn motherfucking entrance. Which leads you to what were the three best matches of the night. And Charlotte Banks gets number three. Number two is Finn Balor and Hidomi Itami versus The Ascension. Number one, Sami Zayn, Adrian Neville. And I say that with that, like, that's, I guess, my personal feeling. But really, every match on this was a five-star. Even a squash match was five stars because of the story they told with it. Every match was a five-star match. I mean, the only criticism I can have is this nitpick, which tells you something. It's a fucking nitpick, but the fact that the celebration of Zayn went a bit too long and it sort of gave away what was about to happen. But that's only if you were an independent wrestling fan who knew about their history. If there was anybody who was watching this who didn't know who these people were, it was still shocking, and they probably didn't see it coming. The fact of the matter is, this is a five-star pay-per-view, and this was the goddamn pay-per-view of the motherfucking year. And anybody who says otherwise does not, they need to turn in their wrestling card because they don't know what they're fucking talking about. And I'll say it again to what I said on the WrestleCast. You know, Itami needs polish, a little bit more polish, but he'll be ready soon. Owen needs about a month of polish to polish up on things. He's definitely going to be ready soon. Balor, Zayn, Neville, and I'll say Charlotte and Banks, The Ascension, they're all ready for the goddamn main roster, and they needed to be there 2 fucking weeks ago. And, you know, if this is a preview of what WrestleMania will be in 3 to 5 years, WWE's future is looking so fucking bright. As Triple H tweeted, you know, can anybody help me? I'm missing a big box of brass rings. To which the first reply is like, it's over here at NXT Evolution where a bunch of guys grabbed them. And I'll leave it with this. After NXT TakeOver Our Evolution, who needs motherfucking Punk? And that's the perfect way to encapsulate it. WWE proved that, at least in their future, they don't need Punk. Because they got this line of great superstars who can take his place. You know, Punk talked about himself being a cog in the wheel. Well, he's a cog in a very special line of wheel, a line of wonderful, great superstars who go out day in and day out and perform for people like me, who I am endeared to for always being there to entertain me. And if he wants to go run off and play mixed martial arts, you know, with Jason David Frank or whoever, go Punk, go play your mixed martial arts. We don't fucking need you. We're going to be here with people like Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville and Charlotte and Sasha Banks and Finn Balor and Hidomi Itami and the Lucha Dragons and the Ascensions and Kevin Owens making fucking history and printing motherfucking money. So NXT Revolution gets 5 out of 5 stars for me. And with that, I think it's time for a break. I need to take a break. I need to refill my drink. And when we come back, we're going to get into Starrcade 1983 on this extra long episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be. It's still going up.
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu. The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
Yeah, play it. Come on. Play it loud. Play it loud.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Illogic. Foolish emotions. A constant irritant.
And out,
Two. I'm on the circus. Right next to the dog-faced boy.
True.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit.
It's a super prize package worth $9,388.
Money.
This isn't the biggest bag over the head punch in the face I ever got. God damn it!
Ow! Go away, Baden.
And now, together by live simulation via the internet, your hosts, Scott Gardner.
He killed a police officer, for Christ's sake!
Thank God damn what he didn't kill off.
And Chris Honeywell.
Keep away! Keep away from me!
You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
You're looking at me?
Yeah, because she thought you're some kind of freak. Now, come on,
hey,
let's go.
She likes me, eh?
No way.
Shut up, you freak!
Julius, you...
I said shut up! It's a manhole! A manhole!
TwoTrueFreaks.com.
Hey, everyone. My name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman Homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
And welcome back, and let's get right into it. Starcade 1980. I think I've been saying Starcade 1983. If I said Starcade 1983, I apologize. I reviewed that. That was actually one of the first reviews I did back when I started this podcast, so I apologize for that. I'm reviewing Starcade 1984, which has the title of The Million Dollar Challenge. This took place on November 22nd, 1984. From the Greensboro Coliseum in Greensboro, North Carolina, which is the same place as Starcade 1983 happened. And it has 11 matches, I check. Let me just double check. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yep, 11 matches. With the main event, of course, being Ric Flair versus Dusty Rhodes for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. And a cash prize of $1 million, which was the first time ever, with special guest referee Smoking Joe Frazier. And of course, there's so much to get through, but I don't know how much I can talk about a lot of this stuff because, in watching this pay-per-view, I've realized that I think early 80s wrestling and late 70s hasn't aged well. Maybe it's because as wrestling fans today, we're spoiled with the maneuvers we see, and just the chain wrestling we see. In preparing to talk about this pay per view, I also watched the Legends of Wrestling episode where Joey Styles talked with Michael PSH, J.J. Dillon, Jim Ross, and Jimmy Gavin about Southern wrestling, and listening to what they talked about, definitely there is a lot of emphasis on characters and storylines, but there's a lot of brawling in the wrestling going on here. Your commentators, of course, are once again Gordon Solie and Bob Calder. Do an absolutely magnificent job. It's actually one of the great things I actually liked about this pay-per-view was I felt I could just lay down and fall asleep and just listen to them. I mean, they called the matches more. You could imagine that you're listening to these matches on radio and you could understand completely what was going on. I mean, their play-by-play announcing was wonderful. A young Tony Schiavone was your backstage interviewer. Many different refs, including one, why am I blanking on the name? God damn it. Legendary. People are probably going to send me emails because I have completely blanked on his name. I'm probably going to think about it whenever I can't remember whether it may happen before the podcast is over or not. You know, mega famous referee who was like the main referee for WWE for years. Did the Hogan-Andre match at main event where, you know, he got cloned somehow. Part of the Montreal... Earl Hebner. See, I knew if I went through his matches, I would eventually remember the name. Earl Hebner did referee one of the matches here. Let's get started. Our first match is Denny Brown versus Mike Davis for the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Championship. I actually enjoyed this match. I thought this was a great opening bout. Part of the reason I like this match is, in particular, Denny Brown, I think, showcases a lot of things that would become very popular in the future, including stuff that would become very popular 10 years later, or as, you know, or should I say, you know, 10, 15 years later, as the styles of Lucha Libre and the styles of Japan would become bigger influence because of ECW and the likes. As he does a lot of flying head scissors and a lot of flying around. So I kind of very much looked like a very big precursor to what would make WCW extremely popular in the 90s, which was that cruiserweight division undercard. And I like the ending. I think it's a very smart and sort of very athletic ending as well. Basically, what happens is Mike Davis, who was the champion, reverses Denny Brown into the corner. He bounces off, catches him, and goes to hit. Does a belly-to-back suplex and does the pin. Well, his shoulders are down and Brown's shoulders are down. But Denny didn't lift his shoulders at the last moment, so at the end of the day, it's Davis who's the one who's actually pinned. I thought that was a very intelligent way to end the match, and something different. And, of course, Denny Brown becomes your new NWA World Junior Heavyweight Champion. I thought it was a solid way to open the pay-per-view. Next, we had Brian Adinas versus Mr. Ito. Now, I don't know much to say about this match. Adinas basically defeats Ito with an airplane spin. You know, I always wondered how people pinned them with that. I guess it, you know, again, one of those things where I'm spoiled, you know, you think airplane spin for a pin. That's more of a joke move nowadays. But back in the day, it very logical that I could get the pin. I guess there is very much more of a science to what, you know, again, being spun around and not knowing where you are. Easily could probably pin somebody for three if they had no legs about them, but it's like such an old move nowadays that nobody could imagine anybody pinning anybody out of an airplane spin. Unless you're Eugene. But, you know, it was a match. Part of the problem is, unless you grew up during Southern Wrestling, I would imagine anybody listening to this podcast who grew up during the heyday of Southern Wrestling, who has watched essentially Southern Wrestling, would know these people, and they may have a better affection to it. But again, I became a fan. When I initially became a wrestling fan, I became because of Hulk Hogan and the Rock and Roll Wrestling Connection. And I was brought up with the Northern style of wrestling, the WWE style of wrestling. I really didn't have that much. I really didn't even really see, I think, anything from Southern wrestling until probably very recently. I mean, mid-2000s, I probably knew a lot more than I started learning about some of the Southern wrestling promotions, as WWE had put out footage and shown footage before for their Hall of Fames of wrestlers who were going into Hall of Fame and the like. But I really didn't see, I wasn't brought up, and until very recently, I have not really seen much of Southern wrestling. I mean, I've seen a lot more thanks because of the WWE Network. But because of that, I'm not as opponent to these characters and to these people. And I think that's the, unfortunately, a downside of these pay-per-views and why they've not aged well is unless you knew the storyline and know who these people are, and I would have to imagine it'd be the same for back then. If you were just a casual viewer and you maybe just watched one territory because it was closed circuit, so let's say you're from Mid-South, because I don't think there's really many people here from the Mid-South, and you're only a casual viewer and you watch this, you'd have no idea who these people are and why they're facing each other and what their moves are, and it can leave you very underwhelmed for some of these, or overwhelmed, or whichever the proper way to say it is, because a lot of the match is brawling, and then one move that somehow wins it. I think now we have another good solid match. You have Jesse Barr, son of Art Barr, versus Mike Graham, son of I wanted to say Frankie Graham for a second, but you know it's Eddie Graham. I was wondering, son of Eddie Graham, Florida Championship Wrestling promoter. But Jesse Barr versus Mike Graham for the NWA Florida Heavyweight Championship. Again, and that was another thing that was sort of interesting, is that yes, you have the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. That was the, and you know, the United States Television Champion, that these were sort of the champions that would go around the territories. But each territory also had their own like heavyweight title and the such. And you would see that several times, because you had the NWA World Heavyweight title defended here, you have the NWA Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight title defended here, you had the Brass Knuckles Heavyweight Championship, which was something from Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship, and a lot of the, you know, Dusty Rhodes and apparently Manny Fernandez were the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Champions at the time. While Black Bart and Ron Bass were also tag team from another territory, and so on and so on. It can get very confusing who's champion, who's not. I think a solid match from Bart and Graham. Another criticism of this pay-per-view is there's a lot of shenanigan finishes. A lot of booked cheating and everything. In this case, Jesse Barr getting the win with his feet on the ropes and the referee not seeing it. Which, you know, again, if this is especially at this time, if this was the big event of the year, you would think you'd want to book a lot of clean finishes so you could, again, have the, again, that closure to some of these storylines. Again, not closure in the sense that, oh, well, we'll have to move on to the next storyline or whatever, but, like, you've had them feuding up to this point. This is the big payoff that can also, not only if you want to stop the feud, you can stop the feud on a great point, but also lead to great continuing of the feud. And I don't think you got it with a lot of these matches. Still, this was a solid match, even if it did have a shenanigan ending. Our next match, I had no idea what was going on. You had the Assassin and Buzz Tyler versus the Zambui Express, because this is not fucking racist at all, of Exim Akeem and Kareem Muhammad, managed by Paul Jones in a tag team elimination match. Now, it's supposed to be a tag team elimination match. Only one pinfall happens. They brawl, some go out to the rings, as somebody, goddamn, tries to add me on Skype. Thank you, whoever you are. Anyway, yeah, it's sad, you know, the Assassin, I want to say it's Elijah, like, bump into each other, and it causes Elijah to fall down on the mat. Assassin's up against the rope. Buzz Tyler basically pushes him off the ropes, and he lands on Elijah and gets the pin. And then, I guess, the Zambui Express said, fuck it, and left, and the Assassin and Tyler won. again, WCW setting up a stipulation and somehow not going with the stipulation. It was... There's a lot of matches that can be really forgettable on this card, I think. Maybe not a lot, but it seemed like there was a lot. It's like a lot of short matches and everything. And I guess that was also for the time. You really only got 5-10 minutes for a match unless you were the main event. But, you know, it's just... I really had no understanding these characters, and I think it hurts my enjoyment of it because I want to understand these characters. And then for a lot of these people, you know, this is my first time ever seeing Denny Brown or Mike Davis or Brian Adonis or Mr. Ito or Jesse Barr or Mike Graham or Buzz Tyler or the Assassin. Let me get on the list. Really, my first time really seeing Manny Fernandez or Black Bart or Paul Jones. We saw Jimmy Valiant last year's Starrcade, because at that point he was wrestling under a mask and was known as Charlie Brown from Out of Town. Really my first time seeing Ron Bass and Dick Slater, the Koloffs, Ole, you know, I had heard of Ole Anderson. I don't think I had seen Keith Larson before, but I had seen Tony Blanchard before. I've seen Ricky Steamboat. I've seen McDaniels and Billy Graham, and those I've seen, but a lot of these, there are a lot of people. This is my first time seeing these wrestlers, and I feel really underwhelmed by their performances. I mean, I'm trying to be fair, but it's like, and especially in the early part of this pay-per-view, I found myself falling asleep. Our next match is the Raging Bull Manny Fernandez versus Black Bart with J.J. Dillon for the Brass Knuckles Heavyweight Championship. It's basically, it's a street fight, man. You know, the championship, you could almost look at it as a precursor for the ECW title, as these matches were basically fought with no rules, basically. It was a street fight with no rules, so you had to be pinned in the ring. And of course, blood was spilled. No rules. It was just an all-out brawl. The finish comes when, Black Bart, for whatever reason, decides he wants his bull rip, and Dillon throws it to him. But in the process, Fernandez surprises him, bounces off the ropes, and does a inside cradle to pick up the win and the Brass Knuckles Championship. It was a brawl from front to back, and that's the best way to describe it. At least it did have, for the most part, clean finish and a payoff. Which is more than I can say, actually, for a lot of matches on this pay-per-view. But there's, not much to say about that. It was a decent, solid match for what it is, but it was really just a brawl. Then we had another forgettable match. You had Paul Jones versus Jimmy Valiant in a Tuxedo Street Fight Loser Leaves Town match. Here's the consistency of the match. You know, it starts, Jimmy Vail, who's the wrestler, Paul Jones, wrestler, sass, manager at this point. Just like wails on Paul Jones, and he's got his little tie, like, tied to the ropes, and so he's slowly stripping him, and I'm like, do I really want to see this? And he's about to take off the last piece, you know. I thought it was, if they lose the tuxedo, they lose, but I guess you have to pin a person, and all of a sudden J.J. Dillon comes out and basically hits Valiant with an object and knocks him out and causes him to lose the match. This match is forgettable. It really is. Unless you're, again, it's the problem of, I think, Southern wrestling, to where, unless you're into these characters and into their storylines, you really can't appreciate these matches, because a lot of these have a very much brawl-like attitude. And a perfect example of this is the next match. Ron Bass with James J. Dillon, a.k.a. J.J. Dillon, versus Dick Slater for the NWA Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship. You know there's a storyline, and they sort of talk about it, And mind you, I give Bob Caldy and Gordon Sully all the props for trying to have audiences understand the storyline going on with these characters. But if you're not, haven't been there watching it week after week after week, and you're not involved in the storyline, there is a problem with, you know, appreciating it. You know, for instance, I'll put it this way, I can go back and, you know, I'd never seen ECW, Barely Legal 1997. Mind you, while I did know some of these wrestlers, I had never seen a lot of the wrestlers wrestle the style they did. Yet I can still appreciate some of the storylines. You know, I can appreciate the storyline that went on of Sandman, Terry Funk, and Stevie Richards, because I can appreciate, because they did a great job of telling the storyline within the match, and, you know, again, with the maneuvers that kept it interesting. And there was just something about the match to where you became interested in it. I think that's just something that's... It sounds like I'm giving a double standard here, but it's like... These are particular storylines... You know, they had storylines where... They were very simple storylines that you could easily get into. You know, WWE, WCW, ECW all had those type of storylines. So even 30 years later, if you had never been there, never seen it before, you can get into the storyline. You can understand. Here, a lot of these storylines feel very convoluted, and they're built upon week after week after week after week after week after week of storytelling on weekly shows. And unless you understand really what's going on, you can't really appreciate the story like you can. That's why I think it's so being so hard for me to understand what's going on. And you see that, like I said, with this match, a lot of this match saw Dick Slater being an absolute lunatic, constantly going after J.J. Dillon. I'm like, get in the ring, you fool, go after the championship. And eventually Dick Slater gets himself disqualified by shoving the ref. It's like, what I want. I feel like this was good, but I have no appreciation for the storyline to sit there and say it's good. I hope I'm not, like, talking in circles here. But it's like, this pay-per-view was very, very hard to judge for that reason. And this match, I think, is a perfect encapsulation of that. It's like, I feel like this is a good match, but I can't really sit there and say it was a good match, because I can't understand if this was a good match or not. Our next match was had a little bit more simpler storyline, so I could really get into it, because it was simple. It was USA versus Russia, as we had Ivan and Nikita Koloff versus Ole Anderson and his partner of choice, Keith Larson. I really enjoyed this match because it showed great tag team wrestling. You know, Larson and Anderson doing classic sort of Anderson wrestling, the type of tag team maneuvers that him and Arn Anderson would do, of, and they talk about it in the match, of taking one of the half of the opponents and cutting off the ring and keeping them in the corner and just maneuvers and solid chain wrestling that I really enjoyed. But at the same point in time, the match ends again with another, another funky finish of cheating and everything. And they don't even know what happens at the end. Gordon Sutton was like, did somebody win or was somebody disqualified? Basically, Larson gets hit by the chain, I believe, by Ivan Koloff. The chain that he has, and he picks up the 1-2-3, but I don't think anybody recognizes it because what's going on the outside with Nikita and Ole and with Don Canoodle, who was with them. Again, another wrestler I never heard of. And then, of course, they start double-teaming Larson, but Canoodle comes in and, just starts, like, wailing his... Because he was injured. He was supposed to be in the match, but couldn't be in the match. Injured was with them, and then starts like trying to wail on with his crutch and everything. And I'm like very confused by the end of the match. I'm like, this match started off so well. I was really enjoying the chain wrestling, and then it went to hell in a handbasket. But still solid. And what turned out, as far as I'm concerned, to be the match of the night, and even this match had a funky finish with, you know, a foreign object being used to pick up the win for Tony Blanchard. But Tony Blanchard, the NWA World Television Champion, versus Ricky Steamboat for the NWA World Television Championship and $10,000. Well, basically $20,000, but it was basically $10,000 because basically each opponent put up $10,000 of their own money out for grabs, and the winner would take all. This was just a great match front to back, just great chain wrestling. Ricky Steamboat showed that I really think that Ricky Steamboat was the best damn wrestler in the early 80s. I think he was better than Flair. I think he was better than Rose. I think it was just that Rhodes and Flair had a bit more charisma and that showmanship that he didn't quite have yet. But as far as a pure wrestler, Steamboat was better than both of them in his shows here. And him and Blanchard put on one hell of a match. And again, they kind of simplified the storyline to where you understood. Throughout the night, they've been showing a video of basically Blanchard with Black Bart and Ron Bass attacking the small of the back. So they showcased that they had injured him a couple days before, and Steamboat did a great job selling that injury throughout that match, but also telling the simple story that this was for the television championship, and that Steamboat had been trying over and over and over to get the championship from Blanchard, and just him always taking some cowardly way out. And they sort of simplified it so I could understand it, and that got me more into this match. And it allowed me to appreciate the wonderful wrestling that these two were doing better. And they did a great job telling the story. Plain and simple, this was the match of the night. And if there's any match worth watching, I think this is the match worth watching on this pay-per-view. You then have this title match that follows next that I don't know what happened. You have the NWA United States Champion Wahoo McDaniels versus Superstar Billy Graham for the NWA United States Championship. I have no idea what happened. No, I understand. You know, Billy Graham dominates out of nowhere. Wahoo McDaniels hits what they call a tomahawk chop. It's a back hit. It's a double backhead chop. They call it a tomahawk chop, and I'm sorry, every wrestler of Indian, both Native American and Far East Indian descent, who uses a tomahawk chop, as they call it, it's always been an overhead chop. This was it was just a double knife head chop to the chest. More like what Jimmy Superfly Snuka does. So, that kind of led me confused. Gordon Solie calling the wrong move, but also the fact that finishes the match. You know, Billy Graham's wailing on Wahoo McDaniels. He goes off the ropes, and then McDaniel hits him with this double backhand chops, and somehow gets the one count. And then I guess that works. They were saying, his momentum along with the chop caused him to be down for three. It was just out of nowhere. It was an extremely short match, and I couldn't get into it. I'm expecting this great championship match, and, I have no idea what happened. I blinked, and I missed this match. So, yeah, I wasn't happy about that. And then you had the much hype Ric Flair versus Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair, the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, versus Dusty Rhodes for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship and a cash prize of $1 million with special guest referee Joe Frazier. Also special guest judges, which include Joe Frazier. I want to say Inoki from Japan, the great wrestler, was there. And Kyle Petty, NASCAR racer, was for whatever reason a judge. Almost like kind of being like WWE, but trying to use that celebrity element, I guess, whatever they could. I was very disappointed in this match, and not that the wrestlers did a bad job. Flair and Rhodes did a great job. There was a lot of charisma, and that was a really instant match. I just thought the match would go longer. But this wasn't the longest match in the night. There was one, to, I mean, yeah, it's the third longest match of the night, but I thought it would have been the longest, you know, and I felt the match was way too short. I thought, if this match had went on another 5 minutes and then what happened, I don't think it would have as much of a problem with it. I can definitely see how this was controversial. I don't know how I feel. But again, I also watched the Flair Rhodes episode of Rivalries a couple weeks ago, which is what led me to wanting to do these two pay-per-views back-to-back. But at the same point in time, I can see why a lot of people would be disappointed, and I would certainly be disappointed that basically this match gets ended for a small cut over the eye by Joe Frazier. Now, I give credit to both Flair and Rhodes for the aftermatch comment interviews that were absolutely spectacular. But at the same point in time, for your main event of your, basically your event of the year, to pay off like that was just, if I was a customer, I'd feel jibbed. That being said, it was a solid match from Flair and Rhodes. And wrestling-wise, it was great. And storyline-wise, great. It's just, I don't know if I would do that as the payoff. So, that's, you know, my views on Starrcade 1984. Moments of the night. Wow, this is really hard because there's not a lot of moments that really stick out to me. Danny Brown with his smart win over Davis is one that comes to mind. Steamboat's flying body press is another. And of course, the entrances of Dusty Rhodes and Flair count as well. But it's like, there really weren't any moments that come to mind that really stuck to my mind. As far as the three best matches of the night, that's really hard. I would say Jesse Barr and Mike Graham, number 3. Danny Brown, Mike Davis, number 2. But number 1 definitely was Ricky Steamboat versus Tony Blanja for the NWA World Television Championship. I guess that's in my mind, and maybe that's unfair to Flair and Rhodes. They would be number 4, mind you, respectively. But it's like, again, I'm also looking at the payoff, and maybe I'm being, again, I don't know whether I've been spoiled by the WWE, and spoiled by modern wrestling, and spoiled by the fact that when you have these big events, you have to have this payoff. And if you do the payoff right, you can continue the feud further. But it's like, I feel like there wasn't a lot of payoff for this big, massive, hyped event. So Starrcade 1983 is very unique. And the fact that I really don't know what to rate it, because I feel I'm being unfair, but at the same point in time, while I may be spoiled by the WWE, because I wasn't there and I didn't see a lot of these storylines build over weeks and weeks and weeks and I have no memory of them, I can't appreciate it. I think for somebody who was, though, these storylines would have a lot more impact and they would feel a lot more payoff, but I also feel like some of these finishes, they would feel jibbed on. So I'm going to give Starrcade 1984 a 2.5 out of 5, really middle of the road. It's worth watching for the Tony Blacha Ricky the Steamboat match and for the Flair Rhodes match. It's been, in particular, if you're watching a rivalry and want, you know, this is where you start with it. In fact, you could actually really start with Flair winning the gold from Harley Race at the last Starrcade. But after that, really, I think most of this, even, I mean, the Danny Brown Mike Davis match is worth watching. You know, as a precursor of what basically the cruiserweight division would eventually, or sort of the building blocks for that division, no, not that division, but building blocks for sort of light heavyweights gaining some ground in American wrestling. But And, of course, there's the Florida heavyweight match, which, again, if you want to see Mike Graham and Jesse Barr, I guess you'd be interested. If you know these wrestlers and want to look more into these wrestlers, I guess these would be solid matches to look into how these wrestlers wrestled in one way or another. But really, I think it's only worth watching for the Flairs, Rhodes, because of what it meant to their rivalry. And also for Steamboat, Blanchard, because, again, it was just a solid match. And you want to see a good Steamboat match, this is a good one. So, 2.5 out of 5 from me. And that is it for this episode of CMFuse Wrestling Reviews. This extra long episode. As I talked about something that was really great and something that was kind of middle of the road and some other things. Remember, if you have any comments of any kind that you want to send the show, you can send them through several ways. One, you can email the show at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Stitcher account and on our Facebook page, both of which you can find by going to those sites and searching for the Absolution Network. And you can always leave a comment on the post itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content. This, of course, includes Shin Tiger Kuril and his videos, but includes his, you know, he's always reviewing the latest wrestling stuff that's coming out. John Ramosos and his Sentai videos, along with voice acting videos. Tom's Top 5, Tom's Prerogative, the Intergalactic Graphic Review that I do with Edwin, my co-host, for that show. And, of course, other stuff, including special stuff that's on the ballot for the holiday season. You can find that at www.an.132productions.com. My Comic Book Crazy podcasting site, where you can find Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, my Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. Also, make sure you check out the sidebar of the site where you can find all our friends and check out their stuff. This, of course, includes Matty J and TWK and the WrestleCast over at ReviewTopia.com. Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, along with From Crisis to Crisis, that he does with his friend Jeffrey Taylor. Spidey Dude and the Clone Saga Chronicles. You can find at ClonesagaChronicles.com. Steven Schleicher and the Major Spoilers Podcast. And, of course, Scott Gardner and the 22 Freaks Podcasting Network. Along with many others that you can find on the sidebar of the site. So, that is it for this episode of CMGS Wrestling Reviews. Next episode, which is coming out in a couple days, well, back to our regular scheduled time, though I don't know how long that one will go, as we go 1 year later, and we take a look at the grudge match continuing, as we continue our look at the start of the epic rivalry that was Flair versus Rhodes, as we look at Starrcade 1985. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me, CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you, yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around, all around, bring me down to negative body. But I believe, yes, I believe, I say that I believe. I stand on my feet, one big blood down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and to the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of to the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing I want.
now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will rip a hole in a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being, and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up, and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself, and I don't even know. Your mother's a little fast life, but you're dreaming.